Raven's Veil is a dark fantasy horror anthology podcast that may contain explicit language and thematic elements not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Raven's Veil, a dark fantasy horror anthology podcast set in the shadowy world of the Deep South, a convergent reality situated around what most of humanity has accepted as reality. Obscured from human eyes, Raven's Veil is a mystical sanctuary intended to preserve the existence of its immortal inhabitants. The Makori, commonly referred to as witches, have been hunted since before written history. The witches of the highlands fled persecution to a new land that would come to be known as Appalachia. In these parts, you should always be leery of the things that scare witches. The veil is thin tonight, family. Let's see what darkness lies beyond.
Well, hey there, family. We are so glad you are with us this evening. I'm Nick Devan, your host for this post-season's recap episode. In this episode, we're going to recap the events of the first season of the Raven's Veil podcast. We'll discuss our favorite moments, our theories, our predictions, and our hopes for the future of Raven's Veil. So grab your wands and let's dive into the magical world of Raven's Veil. As we wrap up this season of the Raven's Veil podcast, let's take a moment to look back at the journey we've been on together. Spoiler alert, the following content contains many spoilers. Please proceed with caution if you wish to avoid them. If you haven't listened to all the episodes in season one, stop now and go listen to them. You won't regret it.
In episode zero, The Convergence, we started our journey learning about an alternate reality where the Makori, an immortal magical race of witches, traveled from the highlands of Caledonia to establish a magical sanctuary called Raven's Veil. Hunted, persecuted, and murdered, they fled to the new land that is today known as Appalachia to live peacefully away from humanity and the witch hunters. Their peace is shattered when one of their own betrays them, leading to a chilling confrontation and the question of, were they really safe?
Episode 1, Sybil Shroud, introduced us to Miss Sybil Ashford, a beautiful red-haired, strong-willed schoolteacher from Hemlock Holler. Sybil wakes up in the middle of the night feeling out of sorts and senses a strange presence. She finds herself transported to the house of her night terrors and must confront her biggest fear. The episode ends with Sybil discovering a journal that reveals her mysterious and troubling past.
In our second episode, Homecoming, Sybil finds herself trapped in the house of her night terrors, being attacked by a monstrous demon. As the episode progresses, Sybil discovers strange symbols that protect the house from the demon's attacks. With the magical help of her Aunt Ruby Bee, Sybil is eventually transported to the safety of Raven's Veil. The reality of discovering a demon is out to destroy her is almost more than she can take.
In the third episode, Deathbed, after Sybil is magically transported to the safety of Raven's Veil, inside the Makori Temple, she discovers she's a witch and that the demon, Vrock Crossell, Lord of the Fifth Circle of the Void, is trying to kill her. Aunt Ruby Bee reveals the truth about Sybil's powers and the events that led to her memory being erased. Aunt Ruby Bee assures her that everything is under control. Imagine discovering that everything you knew about yourself was an elaborate hoax, even if it was for your own good.
In Episode 4, The Penumbra, Aunt Ruby Bee and Sybil have a conversation about the difficult task Sybil must undertake. With the guidance of Aunt Ruby Bee and the help of other powerful Makori, Sybil endures the mysterious and transformative ritual to restore her power and her memory. As the ritual concludes, Sybil falls to the ground, seemingly lifeless, but Aunt Ruby Bee assures everyone that she will be okay. Sybil remains unconscious, but a handsome older man sits by her bedside. Sybil dreams of her mother and the demon while Aunt Ruby Bee tends to her.
In the fifth episode, Sybil's Rest, Sybil remains in a death-like magical coma, with her father, Palmer, and Aunt Ruby Bee watching over her. Aunt Ruby Bee expresses her worry and guilt over the decision they made to strip Sybil of her defenses. Sybil eventually wakes up but finds herself in the house from her night terrors, but it is now old and dilapidated. In her childhood bedroom, she encounters the ghost of her best friends, twins, Lucy and Ruby, who were killed by the demon on Christmas Eve. The twins magically help her sort out her memories. The episode ends with Sybil waking up back in Ravensvale, bewildered but grateful for the return of her memory.
In our sixth episode, The Awakening, Sybil wakes up to discover her magical powers and memory have been restored. She is initially confused and skeptical about the return of her father, Palmer Ashford, who she had been magically made to believe was dead. Aunt Ruby Bee explains that they had to make her believe her father was dead in order to protect her. In a passionate discourse with the Coven of Covens, Palmer reveals that Sybil is capable of wielding all of the magical ascensions. Nadira has foretold that Sybil is the way to destroy the demon once and for all.
In Episode 7, Fortification, our season finale, the demon figures out a way to get through the protective wards of Ravensvale, making a deal with an ancient named Seraphex. The demon Vrock Corsell is allowed to possess a large gray wolf and penetrate the barriers protecting Ravensvale while Sybil begins her magical training. After a killing spree that left 6 dead and multiple wounded, Sybil is attacked, coming to the realization that without full mastery of her powers, she is no match for the power of the demon and somehow magically glints inside the Macquarie Temple. The episode ends with Palmer Ashford and Jude Gregor, Sybil's Sun Ascension preceptor, destroying the wolf and injuring the demon in the process.
We've had an incredible journey this season, filled with twists, turns, and unforgettable moments. Today, we're going to dive deeper into the experiences behind the scenes. We have the cast members with us, ready to answer some burning questions and share their insights about the season. I'm joined in the studio today by the cast members of Ravensvale Podcast. Ed Bolden Greer, our writer, creator, director, and voice of our narrator, Lucian Ashford.
What's up, guys?
Jared Bolden Greer, our executive producer, musician, and voice of the Lord of the Fifth Circle of the Void, the nasty demon, Vrock Corsell.
Woo!
Nasty.
Yeah.
Kristen Newby, our talent acquisition specialist and the voice of the main character of the Ravensvale storyline, the strong-willed witch, Sybil Ashford.
Hi.
Lena Perkins, the voice of the kind, sweet, but vivacious Aunt Ruby Bee Atworth.
Howdy, y'all.
Jordan Walker, the deep bass voice of the powerful high priest of the Ravensvale Covens.
Hey there.
So sit back, relax, and get ready for an exciting deep dive into the world of Ravensvale you've come to love. Let's get started. I'm going to be asking you guys a series of burning questions that our staff and listeners have come up with to get to know you guys a little bit better. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
You got it.
All right.
Are they ready?
The first question will be a round robin where we will hear from everyone. So guys, what was your favorite scene or moment this season, whether your character was in it or not? Ed?
Well, I think my favorite scene was the scene where Sybil gets to meet her two best friends, Ruby and Lucy, and how that played out. I think that the reason I like it so much is because we tied it into the Christmas story as well. And so we got to do a lot of Easter egg opening there.
Jared, what do you think?
I might be cheating a little bit because I did write part of it, but the Christmas episode, specifically the combination of characters who we've technically met in the actual storyline, but who are going to be far more present in season two, were threaded in as part of the writing process for the Christmas storyline. And I don't want to spoil that part yet.
That Christmas episode was one of the scariest ones, and yeah. I wasn't expecting it because I thought it was just going to be a Christmas episode.
I just remember when we released it, Lena immediately shouted out to all of us, like, oh God, you got to listen to the...
Yes.
Yeah. Kristen, what do you think? What was your favorite?
Oh goodness. There's so many different moments to choose from. It's really hard to nail one down. I think, honestly, I have to go with Palmer's call to action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to be introduced in one episode to this new character and then to instantly have that range of emotion and power mm-hmm. behind a character was really interesting for me.
Yeah,
to be
Jordan
a part
did
of
so
it
good.
Was,
yeah,
he nailed
a,
that.
It
oh,
was wonderful.
Sure. Oh. Thanks, baby girl.
Lena, what do you think? What was your favorite?
So, yes, I agree with Kristen. The way the sermon of the DS was just so passionate and just sucked you right in, and you were just ready to sign up for war, you know, just ready to go, ready for action. But the finale, you just have to listen. You just have to listen.
All right, Jordan, what do you think? What was your favorite?
Well, I wasn't going to, you know, stroke myself too much and agree with the call to action. And in the interest of that, I'll also move on to probably Waking Up Sybil. I feel like it kind of evokes, you know, what my character's motives are and shows you a bit of my personality for the first time before the big Coven of Coven's beaten. So probably that and something from the finale with this character that is, I always enjoy a self-important, effeminate, somewhat masculine character.
Yeah, the Seraphix.
Seraphix. I mean, honestly, just their whole concept was fun to go through.
Yeah. Not a specific part, but a specific aspect is just the voices that we're doing. Jerry's been killing it with the voices and everybody else with the screams and whatnot. Those things are hard to create when Ed is like, okay, I'm hearing this voice in my head. And then, and usually Jared's like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But yeah. You know what? I just have to say, looking back over the whole season, everything that I had envisioned, y'all just brought it to life. I mean, it was like, wow.
Well, you directed us there, you know, at least a lot of the time, you know, for me. So
very good writing.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we could all feel it when it was the right one for sure. So the next few questions are going to be for Ed specifically. What about voicing the narrator has surprised you?
Something that I don't think I really connected with, even though I was writing it, was how into the storyline the narrator had to be. Later down the road, the narrator is part of the story, but now he's just recanting the story. And so really having to think through and create a character that would be true to form later down the road.
Yeah. Any good storyteller is a part of the story in themselves, but the narrator is telling a part of their past. And also, like, he knows these people, some of them. So, you know, it's probably hard to tell those stories.
Yeah. So who is the narrator and how do they know so much about Ravensvale and the Macquarie?
Well, so this was kind of, I don't know if you'd call it an Easter egg or what, but if you go back to episode zero, and the guy who's in the house and he's telling the story, he's the narrator for the whole series. He's the one telling the story.
Okay, so he's actually there.
Yeah, he's there.
As the creator and writer of Ravensvale Podcast, can you share some insights into your creative process? How do you come up with the themes for each episode, and what inspires you to keep creating new content?
Well, over on the other podcast, The Cauldron, I did kind of an origin story, and in it, I talk about how I was in my real job. I was headed towards burnout, and I talk about how I needed to get back to a creative side. And Jared brought in another podcast for me to listen to, and where I wanted to do a podcast and I wanted to write horror, it was the answer to combining the two. So the creativity, the having no bounds, because I'm creating this whole universe and getting to bounce ideas off people and everything, that's what keeps me wanting to create more and more content. The process, it has evolved since the first time that I wrote a script for an episode. And it's gotten now to I do an outline of where I want the story to go. And then I go in and I fill in the blanks. And I'm a big extrovert, but I've found that my writing process is very introverted. And I don't really like to share any of it until I have a complete work. And then I give it over to Jared, the executive producer, and he goes through it and tears it apart and rips it apart and says, none of this will work. And then I go back to the drawing board.
I'm a villain.
Do you read it out loud once you've
Absolutely.
Finished writing it?
Well,
you guys do a full read through?
No, I do that as I'm writing it.
You talk out loud as you're writing.
That's why I like to be in the podcast office. The G spot, as Jacob calls it. I like to be in there by myself so that I can I can read the line like I hear it in my head to make sure it's translating.
Would you cheat and give us a little bit of spoilers for season two?
I can say this. I'm not big at giving spoilers, but I can say this. Sybil is going to learn magic, but, you know, Sybil's kind of an aggressive, if you haven't noticed, you know, she does her own thing. And so she's not going to learn all the magic before she has to fight the demon, and she's going to be overconfident.
So there's some risk here, some potentially hubris for her.
Yes, lots of risk.
Okay.
Not really a spoiler, but I don't always believe that the heroine or hero of the story always makes it out okay.
Good to know. All right.
That doesn't mean they don't make it out okay. Just don't always make it spotless.
All right. We'll see how that plays out. Okay, I have a round robin listener question for you guys. Is it fun becoming the character and recording the episodes? Ed, how about you start us on that one?
Well, I think that most of the time it's really fun getting into my character. You know, there are days where I have to do a single line over 40,000 times, and that's not always fun. But I really have come to really love my character. And so, yeah, getting into it, it's pretty fun.
Jared?
Most of my parts are the abstract parts, so it's definitely out of fun to, like, do the voices for the demon. You were saying earlier that the Ed's able to communicate, hey, I want you to do this thing, and I somehow know what it is. I know what it is because I made that noise in, you know, a Lowe's one day, and Ed's looking at me like, why are you doing that right now? Yeah. And then he makes me bring it out on command when we're in the studio.
He's cataloging him.
We often say Jared's life goal is to be loud and make sounds. And so you never know what's going to come out of his mouth at any given time. So.
Not at all.
Never a dull moment.
Yep.
Kristen, what are you thinking?
It's definitely fun. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better group of people to help you through the process and encourage you and keep you kind of on task. The character in and of herself getting to that point has been interesting. I won't say that it's been completely all fun. It's been a challenge, but that's the whole vibe of this year is learn new things. So
do you go back and listen to the voice before episodes?
I try to sometimes to make sure that I'm on the same energy level so that it's not completely disjointed. But honestly, as much as I can, I try to kind of stay away from the recordings.
I think one of the hard things for the Sybil character is that in this season, she's had to be the opposite of who she really is because she's just had her feet knocked out from under
her.
And so, yeah.
Sometimes literally.
Sometimes literally. I mean, she's always laying down and sleeping.
Bless.
Lena, how have you felt going into your character for shows?
Yes, it is so much fun. I love coming to the recording studio, and I am amongst a great group of talented, gifted people, and it's just so much fun. I love it, and I love getting into the Aunt Ruby Bee character because I can identify with her, and it's just fun to step into another world for just a little bit.
I have to say, I wasn't thinking about Lena when I created Aunt Ruby Bee, but now that she is Aunt Ruby Bee, there wouldn't be anybody else.
You are Aunt Ruby Bee. Yep. Jordan, how do you get into your character and do you enjoy it?
Oh, I mean, it's a wonderful outlet. I've worked in insurance for way too long. I'm fairly reserved socially, but I'm also an introverted extrovert in a way. I'm creative, and it's great to break out of that. I've also kind of always wanted to build something like Palmer has, and I don't do much for myself, but I will call to action and do anything else for the people around me. So kind of evoking that personally is something I can definitely relate to. No, yeah, I have a great time doing it.
Awesome. Okay, Lena, got a couple just for you. What do you like most about Aunt Ruby Bee?
So what I like most about Aunt Ruby Bee, her cooking. I like to eat and I like to cook as well. and apple stack cake and pinto beans and cornbread. And I also, well, I just have one thing, I guess, to like most about her is what the question is. But like her love, she loves her people. She loves her niece. And I love that. I just, love is the most powerful.
Ed, can I sneak one in here real quick?
Yeah.
What's the inspiration for the apple stack cake? Is there somebody you know that does it?
Yeah, my mama. Oh, okay. She made the best apple stack cake in the world. And I, as I was just thinking of what I was just, when I was writing the episode where apple stack cake appeared, you know, in the kitchen, I just thought, if I was in a situation, what would be the biggest comfort food for me? And it was apple stack cake. And she never goes to the apple stack cake, but it's there if she wanted it.
It's too bad. My great granny was also a apple stack cake master, and I've not had one like it since, but I bet your mom's is probably really close.
Yeah. All right, Lena, who are you using as an inspiration for Aunt Ruby B?
Well, I am using my dad's first cousin. Her name was Sandra, and she and my dad were both very close as children. And after my dad died, she kind of wanted to really make a presence in our lives. And she taught me how to fish and, you know, just the things that she thought was important, you know, in the absence of my father. So she really, she showed me that love. And her niece calls her Mama Duck. So, you know, she's got that love. And I can really think her and Aunt Ruby B would have got along really great.
So she is your Aunt Ruby B.
In a way, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
That's cool.
That's got to be a little easier to have somebody in, you know, specifically that you're going towards. What is the hardest thing about creating your character, getting into character?
Slowing down. I am a very energetic person, and I think Aunt Ruby B is a very energetic person, but she's learned to harness that energy and still move with an urgency, but at a very intentional pace.
Yeah. See, I've heard that a lot as we're recording. Slow down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, another round robin question. What do you think your character will be doing in season two, Ed?
Talking a lot, helping to narratively give you the setting and create the storyline. But I think he's going to play a little bigger role, maybe.
Okay. You would know if anybody.
Don't know yet.
All right. Maybe. Jared?
Well, as the demon, probably doing some ass kicking and getting its ass kicked in return. But as Jude, I think we're going to get to see a much warmer side of that character. I mean, he's only very briefly in the final episode, but I think we're going to get to see a lot from him about who he is and why he would be Palmer's best friend.
Okay, good insight. Kristen, what are you thinking?
Hopefully finding her footing in more ways than one. honestly, I'm looking forward to maybe her regaining her confidence and power, not just learning the magic. Mm-hmm. That's
less questions, more statements. Yeah. Not confused, more.
Well, I'm not the writer, so I don't know.
Ed, are you using this as a basis for your next season?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right, Lena, what do you think your character will be doing in season two?
I definitely think Aunt Ruby B is going to be like checking and double checking and just like honing in on being prepared, because this is, you know, the finale presented an unprecedented occurrence. So she's like, how did this happen? So I think she's going to be really, just really diligent.
And Jordan, what do you think your character is going to be doing season two?
Kind of twisting in the wind between like the highest pride and joy he's ever had and also the abject horror of seeing the price of that on his baby girl's well-being, potentially, I imagine.
All right, good predictions. We'll see. We'll come back and check that maybe later and see about these predictions. Okay, now it's Christian's turn for some questions. All of these questions came from the listeners. Someone else voiced Sybil in the first two episodes. How did you become the voice for Sybil?
Well, just in conversation with Ed one day, we're talking about the fact that growing up, we were both kind of almost shamed into hiding our accents, our regional dialect. I still shy away from it even now, which is always interesting and trying to get back into this character when we do recording. And it just kind of slipped out. We're talking about different foods and stuff and how you would say different things. And there was a moment, I can't remember exactly what we were.
I think you were at the Harry Scary interview.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were.
She let her country out.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there going, she's Sybil.
Yeah, you just have those moments, you know, in emotion and everything when it still comes out. But yeah, so we were just.
Emotions and food.
Yeah. Emotions. Well, liquor. Food is emotion.
It is, yeah. And I think we've all had the conversation about how we've tried to work the Southern Appalachian dialect out of our vernacular and our day-to-day conversations, and how difficult it is now to push it back in. I mean, I remember recording the finale, and I got through half of the intro and stopped and said, I'm not in character.
Right.
Yeah. Still have those moments where in that wrestling back and forth, where you really do want to give the character that authenticity, but then at the same time, you have that little voice, that little thing in the back of your head that you got picked on. It was like, hey, you sound a little, you might sound a little too much there.
I mean, it's hard to say Yeller really and Winder.
Yeah. 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 Especially reading it.
Yeah.
Because reading it, you kind of jump into proper form.
Yep.
Okay, Kristen, another one. What season one episode was your favorite?
Oh, goodness. Every single episode that comes out, every single one that we record is always turning out to be my new favorite. It's really just watching everything grow and watching everything evolve really just blows my mind. So right now I'm going to have to say the season finale. I know that might come across as a cop-out answer, but I'm so excited for more.
Yes.
Okay. When did you feel like you found your stride in voicing Sybil?
I'm going to have to say that came when Sybil wakes up and all of her memories have come back and her daddy's there. Mm-hmm. And just having to tap into that and finally letting go of any kind of almost like embarrassment. When you're new to this sort of thing, you have to let that go and just kind of let the character have that moment. And I feel like that for me was when that changed, that I noticed it for myself.
Well, I certainly noticed it in the second episode that she was in. She finally took a breath.
Yeah.
And just Sybil came out.
Yeah. Seeing the conversion from everyone going from reading to acting at a certain point, right? Like there's a certain moment where I think everybody goes into that next step between reading and acting the script. And I definitely would agree. It came out right around that same time you were doing that speech and the screams you had to do in that episode.
Yeah.
You were working so hard. I was like, are we going to have to do the Wilhelm scream? Are we going to have to do a supplement here?
Right.
And then all of a sudden you let it out. And during the finale's recording, you just went straight for it. That was one take on that scream and you had it and it was great.
That was amazing. I don't think people understand, like, we're just kind of sitting in a studio acting it out. It's much easier to do on a stage than in a sound studio.
Yeah.
Body language and stuff you can rely on there just isn't here. You have to.
Yep. It's all got to be.
And
in the
volume,
voice.
Too. If you're in front of a crowd, volumes, you know, feel easy to get loud, but in this quiet.
And they're not seeing
studio,
us do anything, they're just hearing us.
All right. Here's another round robin question. So everybody feel free to answer this one. What was the most challenging part of learning your character? Ed?
I think the way I envisioned my character when I was writing him at the first has evolved into him being part of the storyline, not just a bystander. And so the most challenging part was making decisions about who this character was inside myself so that I could bring that out in the character.
Jared, you had some hard characters and voices. What was the most challenging part?
Spacing. So when we did the live performance, I just got to go balls to the wall on that one read. And so I was able to put a lot into that one stage performance. But in here, we like to do some of those vocal effects, and it takes planning even on the first read in order to make sure that you can copy the pacing, especially when you're doing very different styles of sound production, right? So some of those I'm whispering forcefully, some of those I'm sort of inhaling through certain sounds, right? And it's really hard to space all those things so they feel the same, even though they're produced very differently.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, when we're lining, we're often doing multiple voices on top of them. So if you do the first one at a time, then all the other ones, or vice versa.
Yeah, they got to fall into that same.
The live show, and everybody but Jordan was involved in the live show. It was a phenomenal experience. We got such good feedback from it. And we're doing that again this year in a bigger way at Appalachian Horror Fest, which has been scheduled for Saturday, October the 12th. We're going to have a whole new show for everybody.
Awesome. That's exciting. I know last year's went real well.
Yeah.
Okay. Kristen, what was the most challenging part of learning your character?
There are so many different layers to the possible answer for this question on my end. Not only just the character, right? You think about, this is new to so many of us. Like me personally, this is a first. And it's easy to read aloud. You know, we've all done that in school throughout the years. Getting into the emotion of it, I feel like letting that out and making that translate, that's been fun, but definitely the biggest challenge for me.
Lena, what do you think was the most challenging part of your character?
Again, for me, just the slowing down, but also, you know, Ed has done such an amazing job of writing, and I've really, you know, I don't want to disappoint in how I read that. So like, I want it to be exactly how you picture it to be. So that's been challenging. Like, you know, and Ed has done great at giving us tips and cues on how to say the things that we need to say to get across how he wants it to be done. So, but that's been challenging.
Well, that's nice of you to say, but I want to just say it is so easy to work with this group, because if a line falls flat or something and we have to do it over, it's just a matter of just giving them like a little nudge in the right direction, and they just take it and run with it. And it's just amazing.
It's really difficult when you're speaking live to stumble over words, right? When you get a spoonerism, when you flip two words and they get all mixed up together, it's really annoying and can be very embarrassing. But like when you're doing these reads and that happens and it just keeps happening and you forget how to say the word because you've read it so many times in the last 4 minutes,
yep,
and you're delivering it for the 32nd time, but with slightly different energy to make it feel the right way. It can be so frustrating inside because you just want to do it the right way. Right. And that's also a really difficult part of this whole thing, is trying to make sure that you carry the same energy, the same intent, without losing any of the clarity, because everyone stumbles over their words. Yep. So
try not to get wrapped up in that perfectionism, right? We all sit here, we trip over it. And like,
I feel
I
personally attacked. I will say I'm the one who makes the biggest mistakes and words that you wouldn't even imagine. Magnificent. I forgot how to say magnificent. Yeah. I had to get somebody else to say it.
But what a beautiful opportunity for us. That takes so much pressure. When the creator himself is sitting over here doing retakes, we're like, oh,
mouth
okay,
no word
we,
goods.
We can do
we're
this.
Good.
We can do this.
I know words.
All right, Jordan, what was the most challenging part of your character?
Well, we sound pretty similar, but we're not the same people at all. And he's obviously a bit older than me. His emotions, he can be
a bit. He's like a century and a half. Well, he's like a millennium and a half older than you.
To the public, you know, he's a dad. Honestly, his emotions, he has like a good grip of them. Mine kind of exists between 0 to 3 and 9 to 11. I don't really do well in any way between those numbers, and so having to, you know, express that, having to, you know, get from the reading to the acting for a new character I've, you know, not heard of before. That's probably the most challenging thing. But thankfully, you know, there's a good team around me that helps me there.
Do you have a natural Southern accent, or are you from the South?
No, yeah, I'm from Newmarket, about 30 minutes that way. It kind of comes out when I'm drunk or pissed, right, mostly.
We get him really drunk and try to make him mad. Actually, I can't imagine him mad, because the times that he has to do, like, anger portrayals, we have to kind of pump him up for that. So I don't think he has a big temper at all.
Yeah, there's like a tempered glass ceiling between it. Like, I can get there, but like, if I'm there, I have a hard time coming back. So like, it's just I'm naturally predisposed to like, no.
Okay, now more specific questions for just Jordan. You're the most recent voice actor to join the cast. What was that like?
I'd say, you know, pretty warm and welcoming, not to be too cliche. I've also recently kind of had to face everything I built being in jeopardy, on a personal level, just, you know, relationship stuff like Palmer's going through. So, I mean, dealing with that, and then my character being like, oh my God, I'm afraid of everything I've built and loved, you know, being torn down, hit a little close to certain strings, you know. And so, I don't know, everyone's demeanor and involvement and family disposition, you know, helped that, not to mention, you know, being in a room with a bunch of strangers for the first time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we're all strange. You fit right in.
You don't know the half of
bunch,
it.
Bunch of kind, queer people.
I think, some of us. I don't know if the listeners know, but Kristen and Jared and I work together on a daily basis. We get to see each other. And we met Lena because she went to school at our school. And we see her occasionally. She just works up the hill, but we only see her occasionally. We never get to see him.
So yeah, I was a referral.
Yeah.
Okay. I was doing pageant voice work and random little blurbs, and some friends reached out.
As far as anyone knows, we are a nice and normal family. No, we just have to ease people into it sometimes.
Normal.
Normal. Air quotations.
I like that word.
Normal.
Abby normal.
Okay, Jordan, the call to action monologue in the Coven of Coven scene was pretty intense. How did you make it through?
Well, I mean, as a Southern queer person, I've always wanted to bash back a little more than I could, you know, you know, to be completely honest, back to that, you know, emotional scale of mine. And so, you know, between those fantasies and good direction and, you know, righteous indignation, if you will, you know, evoking that pretty much.
I like it. Okay, last question, Jordan. Is there a specific inspiration for your Palmer Ashford voice?
I suppose there's a few. I mean, no one knows my father, but he just sounds like me. And then I'd probably kind of say, like, if Hank Hill had Jeremy Irons' disposition, was kind of the image in my head.
We also told him we wanted him to sound a little bit like a Southern Baptist preacher.
Oh, yeah, hellfire, brimstone, glitter, you know.
Righteous indignation.
Okay, our last round robin questions. What's it like when you guys can't get through your lines? Ed, start this one off for us.
This is me most of the time. So it gets frustrating. Honestly, it just gets frustrating. And like, I want to make it so impactful so that everybody can see what's supposed to be going on and see what's going on around the characters, because I think that lends to the characters being able to do a better job. And I feel like sometimes I walk away going, how can I write the line and not be even able to say it, you know? So, yeah, it's sometimes hard.
Jared, what do you do when you can't get through your lines?
I mean, I've not had too many lines so far. The demons parts have been pretty concise. It's only two episodes so far. And Jude, we've only barely gotten to meet. But mostly it's just repetition. I want to make sure that I fix the things I did last time, so when I mess something up, now I get to mess up something different so I can carry each success forward into the next interpretation.
Kristen, do you have anything you do when you can't get through your lines?
Oh, it can sometimes feel like such a juggling act, right? You get through that, to remember to get through the frustration of it's okay, you can do it again, but also just, you know, where is your energy in this line? Where is your accent in this line? It can be a lot, but this environment and everyone here, again, that just peace, kind of just take a deep breath. We're all right. We have time. Let's go again.
Let's scream again.
Yeah, let's scream again. How many cough drops do you have?
Get on those feet.
Lena.
I just go, Gets it out of my system.
That's your reset. Jordan, do you have anything you do to get through your lines if you're struggling?
If I'm struggling, I beg for direction, and I also make gibberish noises, and I remind myself that I'm, you know, not at work. I kind of act in my corporate job all day in the sense of, like, I'm great, you're great, why would you want to leave? We have all your problems. I know what you're going to say and what you need to hear. And so to break away from that is kind of hard sometimes, but, you know, it's good for me.
He curses about his balls a lot.
Yeah, all the time.
Well, and other things. One of the things that Nick and I were talking about is that he's been collecting bloopers.
Oh, no.
And he's going to throw a few of those in here somewhere in this episode. So I'm really, none of us know what they are. He's the only one who knows. So.
That'll be a very interesting soundboard.
I've got plenty.
I'm looking forward to being
I'm sure he's got plenty.
Yeah. If it makes me laugh, I set it aside.
So what you're saying is the blooper
perks
reel
of
Ed fucking up.
It might be a little Ed heavy, but I'll add some other ones.
I was like, oh yeah, it makes you laugh. I'm safe. Awesome. That's great.
Okay, Jared, that leaves you. You're the only one who I haven't asked specific questions to. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did you create the Vrock Crossel voice?
So kind of like I mentioned earlier, I make noises all the time. I talk in funny voices. Sometimes when I'm teaching, I just switch to an Australian or a New Zealander accent for an entire day. In high school, I went through a Russian accent phase where I literally spoke for 3 consecutive weeks with every person in my life in the same bad Russian accent. And it was to the point where my history teacher actually just refused to answer my questions. He was like, when you're done with this phase, you can join class normally again. But, you know, the demon voice, different noises, pterodactyl sounds, all of those things come out of me all of the time. And so just collecting those together and making them present in the way Ed asks is, you know, that's the process.
I'm curious about this bad Russian accent.
You'll hear it someday.
Okay.
Yeah. He often says when I asked him to do this, he's not a dancing monkey, but mostly I knew he could do the voice of the demon because he does a Wookiee voice.
Really
I love
good.
It. It's my ringtone for him.
I love it.
My mind is blown. That's beautiful.
For real.
That's great.
Okay, Jared, so you create most of the music for the podcast. What's your process in coming up with the parts you play?
So a lot of them are just little melodies that, you know, as an adult, I appreciate my instruments a lot more than I did growing up as a kid. I've always played music. I started playing the cello when I was 4, and then I switched to the upright bass, which was my real dream the entire time I was playing the cello, but they didn't make them 4-year-old Jared size. So I played the cello for about 5 years and then switched to the upright. And then I switched to an electric bass when I was, we moved to a different state and they didn't have an orchestra anymore. So I switched to the electric bass to play jazz band with the marching band. And then I learned to play tuba and sousaphone. And then, when I moved back to Texas, I played upright bass again. And then I didn't play music for a while. A couple of years went by where I just wasn't focused on it. It always sat in the corner and I was looking at it and I was like, oh, I'll pick it up every night or months. But now I often just pick up stuff and I'll just start noodling. And then right around the time Ed was getting into the habit of creating the podcast, I started to really get focused more on it. And I would just, instead of picking up a controller or going outside to longboard or ride a bike, I would instead noodle on the bass for a while. And then I slowly created a few different melodies. Every time Ed starts talking about a new thing he wants to do, a different ad read or a new part for one of his pieces, I start noodling on something else to see if I can't find something that would be a good fit for the mood. I think it's Nadira's theme, which is the entry music for each episode. That was actually something Ed heard, a piece of music that I won't spoil, and it really inspired him. He wanted it to have that feel, and the process of us learning to communicate, where I spent my childhood growing up learning to speak music, which is a language of its own, and Ed not learning that language and him trying to communicate ideas, but just calling everything flat instead of, you know, expressing tone or a scale or a different mode of music. All of those are different things. It was really complicated at first to get that. But once I realized it's a feel thing and I just keep pushing different buttons until I get the feel I want, then or he wants, then that's part of the process, too.
Well, and I think that most people don't know Jared comes from a musical family. Like everybody yeah. does something musical. Mm-hmm. And I come from a family where we talk about feelings, you know? And so I'd say, I want it darker or I want it to be more spooky, you know? And then I do have to give props to Nick because he takes all of the stuff that Jared does and then he adds things to it and he mixes it into what I can only say is just this fabulous artistic design.
Absolutely.
So that it is what I've imagined. And Nick's so good at just taking words I say and making them into this show that we do.
Absolutely. I would say it's understated how difficult it is to go, I want a mood and a feeling, and then to turn that into a piece of music is surprisingly complex, especially when we're not all using the exact same words or backgrounds. And you do a really good job of
Thank
that,
you.
Nick.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, and the pieces that you played lend to it, too, because we didn't want something that was too out front, because mm-hmm. usually there's dialogue behind it. And so that was sort of a different thing, too, because you're not creating a song to be in the forefront.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's also a difficult part is, like, as we're pulling things together, you want it to have multiple positions. You want it to be able to do a lot of different things all at once, right? So that part's also complicated.
Yeah, pulling parts from the main song mm-hmm. that yeah. become parts of the storyline and whatnot.
Ambiance is elusive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jared, everyone was enamored with your story for the Christmas special. I understand you wrote it from scratch, creating the Kohlegeist. Do you think we will see more of the Ravensvale Santa?
Maybe this Christmas, not maybe. I don't know yet. I have been thinking about the different holiday pieces we're planning this year. And so we might see more of Santa. But I do think I like the feel of those kinds of stories. So maybe we'll get a snapshot of a different Christmas icon or Halloween icon interacting with the world, right? And then seeing how we can incorporate them into Ravensvale. Maybe not every time, because that's not necessarily how the pieces come across every time. But I do like the idea of building out the extended or distant universe of Ravensvale with these little side pieces where Santa Claus is real. There is actual Christian magic, but also what does it look like and how does it work is completely unexplored still.
Let's be clear. Santa Claus is real.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I will add on to that when Jared presented me with his Christmas story, I was amazed. Like, it sounded like something from old folklore, like traditions of days gone by. And then to come to find out, I was asking him about the Kohlegeist. He's like, no, I created that character. And I was like, so, and I started Googling. I was like, there's no Kohlegeist? And there wasn't. There's no character like that out there. And so I was just amazed at how comprehensive the story was. And it just blew my mind. And I thought, this is the Christmas story.
I've thought about it a lot. Why would you give somebody a black rock if you're disappointed with them for Christmas? And so I was like, maybe for something spooky for Christmas, we can figure out why we give somebody rocks and, you know, broke off a piece of an evil spirit to keep them from eating babies is pretty good reason.
It's pretty good reason in my book.
I think it's, as I said earlier, I think it's the most disturbing episode we've had. And I wasn't expecting it because it was Christmas. And
yeah. He did such a good job.
The mental imagery.
You were specifically asked to put sleigh bells at the beginning, and I was like, oh, that's misleading.
Yeah, Christmas hasn't been jovial for its whole history. There's a lot of horror and tough lessons and getting through and, mm-hmm. you know, death and whatnot in Christmas history.
And lastly, Jared, what's it like being married to the creator of Ravensvale?
So... shorter answer is interesting. Long answer is I get both the best and the worst versions of all of the stories. And he said he likes to write by himself a lot. And that's true. But I also get phone calls, sometimes three or four in an hour. Hey, what about this part where he reads it? And then I go, nope, you need a different word for that section or whatever. And
that's when I go, ah!
Yeah, and then he's pretty put out by the fact that I'm like, we need to change this entire paragraph. This paragraph is not working. It works in your head, but reading it out loud will be impossible. Or there was a thing we were editing for the final episode. Oh, the solution board. So one of the things I really enjoy is thinking about language and stuff like that. And people would use a proper noun for something like that. So it's just sort of a throwaway segment, but if you can build a word to solve a problem, there's a name for that concept with people who have to do that a lot. And so when he was writing it, it was originally a more wordy concept, but I was like, they would just make that a single thing. Like if this is a thing people do, especially frequently, it would just be a single thing. And so I do enjoy that kind of editing where I get to help shape the quieter part of the world building. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's helped tremendously, like just coming up with a solution, you know, the solution ward is like having the terminology, because I can write a paragraph about the solution ward, but having the one term that becomes canon is amazing.
Well, family, that brings us to the end of our cast question segment. A huge thank you to our amazing cast for their insightful answers and for bringing our beloved characters to life. We thought it might be nice to let the cast say a few words to close the episode. Take it away, gang.
As we conclude the first season of Ravensville Podcast, we find ourselves overwhelmed with a mix of emotions. We've laughed together, cried together, and most importantly, grown together. Your feedback and passion for Ravensville have enriched our content and inspired us to strive for more. Each episode has been a magical journey, and you've been with us every step of the way.
We want to take a moment to express our deepest gratitude to each and every one of you. Your love for the world of Ravensville has been the driving force behind our journey so far, and we've delved into mysteries of the Macquarie, found hope in the most unexpected places. We've been seeing characters evolve, relationships change, and narratives twist in ways that we could never have predicted.
But as we close this chapter in the world of Ravensville, we want to take a moment to appreciate you, our listeners. Your support, your enthusiasm, your engagement, and your love for this podcast have been the driving force behind every episode we've produced. You've made this journey worthwhile. It's been an incredible adventure, and it's all thanks to you, our dedicated listeners. We're thrilled to announce that because of all the wonderful feedback and support, Small Raven Media has approved the Ravensville podcast for another season, so our story will continue in May.
But don't worry, this isn't goodbye. We're reminded of a quote by T.S. Eliot. What we call the beginning is often the end, and to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. So while this may be the end of our current season, it's also the beginning of a new one. We promise to return with an even more captivating storyline, more unforgettable characters, and more moments that will keep us on the edge of our seats. Until we return in May, keep the spirit of Ravensville alive in your heart. Remember the lessons we've learned, the stories we've shared, and the journey we've embarked upon. And most importantly, remember that every end is just a new beginning in disguise.
While we're closing this chapter, another one is just around the corner. We're going to take a brief hiatus to give the cast and crew a well-deserved break for all of their hard work. This pause in production is not a signal of an ending, but rather an opportunity for the team to recharge and rejuvenate. The relentless pace of creating engaging content can often be demanding, and this hiatus ensures that the cast and crew have ample time to relax, gather new ideas, and return with a renewed energy and creativity. While listeners might have to wait a month longer for the next episode, you can look forward to an even more captivating and refreshed storyline when we return. We have some exciting new content lined up, and we can't wait to dive into it with you.
All right, family. Last thing we're going to do here. As we mentioned, as I edit the podcast, I find lots of little gold nuggets of outtakes, and we're going to listen to some of the best here to wrap up this episode.
Sybil stumbled back against the bedside table, knocking the table over. A water of glass.
That's some magic right there.
Yeah.
Ed Bolden Greer, our writer, creator, director, and voice of our narrator, Lucien Asford.
I sure hope not.
You want to redo it?
Stibble?
With the magical help of her aunt, Ruby B.,
Sybil
we
is...
We ain't saying no aunt.
Aunt Ruby B.
Sybil opened her eyes slowly to the smell of Aunt Ruby B's soup bean and cornbread. You just cook them one bean there, Ruby. Just one. It's a big one, but it's just one.
We're going to share it.
Its appearance was a terrifying testament to the unnatural magnificence. The demon exuded an aura of dread and malice. Its appearance was a terrifying testament to the unnatural magnificence of absolute evil. Looking over at Palmer, Sybil sheepishly. Palmer Ashford made a dick. He made a dick.
I bring the dick.
Well, alrighty, family. There you have it. A recap of the entire season. We hope you've enjoyed this little extra look into the world of Ravensvale. Again, thank you for being part of the Ravensvale family. Until then, take care and keep the magic alive. If you like what you've heard this season, make sure you tune in to our next episode. We'll be back in May with season 2. And man, oh man, does Sybil have a bunch of beans to break. Now, family, you adults have a few chores to do. Go on over to ravensvale.com and see about doing your chores on social media. Follow us on all the social media platforms that we've made available just for you folks. Like, listen, subscribe, and follow wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you don't mind, leave us a good rating and a kind comment. You can find the Ravensvale podcast on your favorite podcast platform by searching for the Ravensvale podcast. And again, make sure you hit the follow button to stay up to date with our latest episodes. Oh, and since you're going to have a little free time, tell your friends about us, won't you? So until next time, family.
See you soon!
The Ravensvale Podcast is a production of Small Raven Media. Today's episode was written and directed by Ed Bolton Greer. The host was Nick Devan. The voice of Sybil Ashford was performed by Krista Newby. The voice of Aunt Ruby B. Atworth was performed by Lena Perkins. The voice of Palmer Ashford was performed by Jordan Walker. Audio engineering and sound design by Nick Devan at Nikki D. Sound. Copyrighted 2024 Small Raven Media. All rights reserved.